Silviger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And welcome to the program. Technology is great when it works, and sometimes it does, and sometimes it does what it did before. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm happy that you've decided to rejoin me here on the Howie Silviger Show, right here on the True Talk Radio Network. So if you are surprised at all by what's been going on in university campuses, I'm surprised that you are. This pandemonium that we've seen, these pro-Hamas supporters that we've seen, who aren't really pro-Hamas supporters, you and I both know that. We all know that this farce that claims to be pro-Palestinian protests, pro-Hamas protests, is all fake. We know that it's all set up. And if you don't realize that yet, hopefully by the end of the show you will realize that this is all fake. The pro-Hamas rallies that you've had, where people are banging on the walls yelling, "We are Hamas." I'm sure if you ask any of these people who Hamas are and what they stand for, what are their value systems, I'm sure the answer will be, "I have no idea." Or they'll get aggressive and try to push you away, because that's really the way they work. But you have to remember, and this is why history is important, and this is why when we don't teach history properly, we don't understand the trends, and then the whole world does not make sense to us. So this is why history is important. We're living through an era where if we don't understand history, we don't realize that we've seen this movie before, we know how this movie is going to end, and we know exactly the way this movie is going to play itself out. If we don't realize that, then we are not paying attention. And we have to start paying more attention. So, let's go back, way back, to Vietnam War protests in the 1970s. So the American government decided to go to Vietnam and to liberate the Vietnamese from the communists. That's really what it was. It's always a war against communism. So liberate the Vietnamese from the communists. And who took to the streets to oppose this? The peacenik students. They went to the street to oppose this. And how did they start opposing it? How did this all start? They had rallies in the streets. They had rallies. "We are going to oppose to Vietnam. We're going to march through the streets. We're going to embarrass the American government. They're going to have to pull the troops out of Vietnam because we are going to put so much pressure on them that they're not going to be able to leave them there." And the students protested in the streets, and they walked around with signs condemning America. They walked around with signs condemning capitalism. They walked around with signs promoting communism, with Che Guevara, the biggest racist, misogynistic, homophobe around, and demanding that not only should America pull their troops out of Vietnam, but the American industrial complex should fall, the American economy should collapse, and the American government should disappear and be replaced with a socialist government. This was the demand in the 1970s by the Vietnam War protesters. The protests went on, and the government did not pull the troops out of Vietnam, so what happened next? Now, if you read history and you're paying attention, you will realize the next step was sit-ins, encampments. "We are going to occupy an office and we are going to stay here until we get our way. We are going to sit in a building. We are going to sit in the entrance of a building. We are going to block a university campus. We are going to be an impediment. We are going to sit and we are going to wait and block everybody from conducting their business and be a total pain in the butt until we get our way." This was the student solution, sit-ins. And so they go into a government office, they go into a university office, they go in front of a university. They would all just sit down, and they would block anybody from conducting any business in that realm. And they wouldn't leave And it didn't matter what you said to them, didn't matter what you did, they wouldn't leave. Sometimes they chained themselves to an office desk or to a fence. And they refused to leave until the police came and removed them. And this happened over and over again in the 70s. All right, so the 70s is 50-odd years ago. Maybe that's too far back for a lot of people to remember. I know memory is short-term, and it's getting shorter and shorter. Attention spans are very short these days. So let's go back to 2011, where we're not talking a long time ago. We're talking over a little bit over a decade ago. Let's go back to 2011. Occupy Wall Street. So what was Occupy Wall Street? The 1% controlled the entire economy. And we are the 99%, they yelled. And what did they do? They went to Wall Street, they sat down in the middle of the street. And they sat there and they set up tents in the middle of Wall Street. And they said, this is our encampment, this is our encampment. We are going to stay here until the 1% gives the 99% their due. It didn't matter that the 1% worked for the money. It didn't matter the effort and the time and the investment that the 1% put in to get that money. The 99% deserved their share, and we're not leaving here until we get our share. That's what they said in Occupy Wall Street. And they had an encampment on Wall Street. And they sat there until the police came and removed them. Is that too far back? 2011? Perhaps. Let's go back just 2 years, 3 years ago. A black drug dealer and drug addict, George Floyd, tried to pass off a fake $20 bill at some store, was caught, the police were called, and he ended up dead from a fentanyl overdose, as it was proven by his autopsy. But the police were blamed. It didn't really matter if George Floyd would have ended up dead. If he wasn't dead, then they would have said he was beaten up. It didn't matter. It was a catalyst to start a fight. And so what happened? The Black Lives Matter movement was created. And what did the Black Lives Matter movement do? First of all, they were a socialist movement. And the first cries that we heard was death to America, death to capitalism. Because that's always the first cries we hear. And then what happened? They started protesting in the streets. Thousands of people would go out and protest. And what did the signs say? They didn't say, you know, poor George Floyd. I mean, some of them did. But many of the signs said, death to America, death to capitalism. So a lot of the signs said, death to the Jews. Then what happened? They weren't getting their way. They weren't winning. Their protests weren't being effective. So in Seattle, they blocked off a part of downtown Seattle. They called it Chaz, an independent zone, our own country, they said. They set up tents, and they had an encampment. And they sat there until somebody died. And then what happened? They still refused to leave, so the police came in and removed them. Does any of this sound familiar? We've seen this movie before. This is not new material. They keep rehashing the same material over and over and over again, and the media keeps acting as if it's brand new. Nobody makes these connections. Nobody cares to make these connections because the more that this happens, and by the way, media is in cahoots with this, because the more this happens, the more media people are watching, the more media people are watching, the more money media makes. So the more that these people protest, the more they wreck America, the more they run around and destroy countries, the more they yell death to the Jews and we support Hamas, the more that they yell October 7th never happened, the more eyes go onto television stations, the more eyes go onto websites, the more eyes and ears go onto radio stations, the more money they make. Period. That's what's going on. And we have to understand what's going on. So if we understand that's what's going on. And there's another little piece to this that we have to look at, too, that I haven't seen analyzed in too many places. So let's take a look at the other little piece of this, which is actually a very important part. When did the Black Lives Matter riots start? Well, they started in 2011. So what was happening in 2011? Well, of course, It was an election year. Interesting, isn't it? That these kind of riots and these kind of protests always happen around election times. So why do you think that is? Why do you think that an election or a pending election, it could be a year before, and in the United States, and this is all based around the United States. In the United States, elections happen every 4 years, and about 2 years before the election, campaigns start, and you can pretty much almost tell who's going to win the election by the time the election comes around. But why do you think all these movements, and they're all the same, all these socialist, destroy America, death to the Jews, death to America movements, all happen around the election times? They're distractions. They're paid for by these groups that want to distract you, that want to shine a shiny light over here, so that you're not noticing what's going on over there. And that's really what's happening, and that's continuously what's happening. Now, why are they doing it now? Because Joe Biden is failing as a president. And so they have to shine a light on the other side. This is an election coming up. Joe Biden's running again. So they got to shine a light somewhere else so that nobody's focusing on Joe Biden's failures. This is really all that's happening. So many of the protesters on campus right across North America have no idea what they're protesting for. Most of them get their news on Twitter, or they get their news on TikTok. And nobody really has an idea what's going on or why they're out there. Yeah, you can watch video after video, and it's fun to watch them, but it gets kind of sad after a while. You can watch video after video after video after video of people on Twitter and TikTok and YouTube who are asked, why are you here? And then they get aggressive. They get aggressive because they can't answer the question. You ask them a simple question like, what river and what sea? They can't answer the question. Yet they're more than happy to chant from the river to the sea. You ask them, where is Gaza in comparison to Jerusalem? They can't tell you. You ask them anything. What are the surrounding countries? They can't tell you. Define the borders of Palestine. They can't tell you, but they want to free it. It's very telling that the people who are involved in this have no idea what they're involved in and are only there because they're getting paid. All right. Let's assume that there are a few people there who actually care about the issue. I can't think that there are very many, but let's say there are a few people there who really care about the issue. It's unfortunate. And I say this with a true heart, even though I'm not a Hamas supporter and I'm not a Palestinian supporter, but I say this with my true heart. It is extremely unfortunate that their cause was co-opted by a group of anarchists who want to destroy America and are using any cause they could grab their hands on, Black Lives Matter, Vietnam War, Wall Street, anything they could grab their hands on and bust up into a huge deal. They're jumping onto any cause and co-opting any cause. And it's really sad that they co-opted this cause where some people actually care about it and are killing it, are killing the cause. It's extremely sad. Because after they're done with it, and this has happened over and over again, take a look. Have you heard about Black Lives Matter in the last 6-7 months? No. Because after they're done with the cause, after the socialists have finished destroying the cause, they dump it and move on to something else. And that cause is in the waste bin of history. So at the end of the day, all this fighting, all these encampments, all this screaming, all this I am Hamas, all this baloney that's happening all over North America, at the end of the day, it's all going to collapse because the socialists are going to get tired of this cause, move on to the next one. And what's going to happen is this cause is going to die. So maybe the correct response for Israel supporters, maybe the correct response for people who support the truth and who support the right side of history, maybe the solution for them or the thing that they should be doing is just riding the wave and waiting. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe this just wait it out. Eventually it's going to die. And then the Palestinian cause is going to be gone for at least 20 years. You're not going to hear a word about it for 20 years. I mean, that might be the most prudent way to deal with this. because fighting it seems kind of pointless. You know, you can only argue a cause, and you can only argue a political point of view with people who care about the politics. So if you're going out to argue with the people who are protesting, and that's fine, a lot of people like to do that, then I have no issue with that at all. But if you want to argue with the people who want to protest, who are protesting, and they have no clue about the issue that you're arguing, then the argument seems to be futile. I watched a guy the other day. He was trying to explain to one of these protesters who was standing with a big Palestinian flag, and he was trying to explain to him that him standing there is a detriment to his own cause. And he was trying to explain it to him. And he was trying in earnest, honestly in earnest, to explain it to him, saying, you're hurting your own people. By doing this, you're hurting your own people. And the reason you're hurting your own people, and he went step by step, the reason you're hurting your own people is because you're diminishing their cause. The reason you're hurting your own people is because, look, what happened October 7th, supporting Hamas and associating the entire cause with Hamas and the barbarity of Hamas is really not going to help your people in the long run. And so on and so on and so on. And the guy was looking at him blankly. It was actually a fun video to watch because the guy he was arguing with was looking at him totally blank, with a blank look on his face. And the Jewish guy, and he was a Jewish guy, and he said, listen, he said, I actually empathize with your people. I really have a big heart for Palestinian people. I just want to help you, and you're doing this wrong. And he said to the guy, do you have family? Are you from the area? Are you from Israel? Are you from Palestine? And the guy looked at him and said, no, I'm actually a Moroccan who was born here. And he said, okay, so you support the cause? And the guy was about to answer, and another guy pulled him away. And I'm thinking, why? Why did the other guy pull him away? And it wasn't because he was afraid of what he was going to say. He was afraid that he couldn't say anything. He was afraid that we would find out, that this video would find out, that this guy was totally clueless on the politics and on the geography, on anything that had to do with the fight. He was there protesting because he answered an ad on Craigslist. And I've seen the ads. They exist. And he was getting paid to be there. So the cause didn't really mean much to him, and arguing the cause really didn't mean much to him. And the more that these people are exposed, the worse it is for the cause. So somebody who actually cares, or an organizer at the event who actually cares, would pull them away. There was another guy who went to the university, one of the universities, and went over to the encampment at the university and said, let me talk to you. Some people sitting there said, let me talk to you about the cause. Let me talk to you about this whole thing. And he said, no, there's a media guy over there. Just go to that table over there. There's a media guy. he'll be able to answer you. Just go to the media guy. There's a media guy? Hold on one second here. This is supposed to be grassroots, right? This is a grassroots movement. And there's a media guy? You have a public relations office? What kind of grassroots organization has a public relations office? The ones that are good and funded by big nonprofit organizations that want to promote a cause. Now, the cause that they're promoting is not Free Palestine. Look at the signs. It's definitely not Free Palestine. The signs that say Free Palestine or Not on My Dime, it's not a criticism of the Israeli government. It's a criticism of the American government. Don't give money to Israel. Divest and boycott from Israel. It's the same stuff we hear all the time. And it's just shocking that people think this is new and think that this is an original thing. I'll tell you, when I was in university, and that's a long time ago, when I was in university in the early 90s, the same thing happened. It's always just continuous. It's the same arguments, and you could go any decade from the founding of the State of Israel. Well, not really from the founding. You go any decade from 1964 with the founding of the Palestinian Liberation Organization all the way through till today, and go onto university campuses anywhere in any decade from 1964 and the founding of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which in fact created what's today known as the Palestinian people. Before that, they didn't exist. So the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which grabbed an Egyptian named Yasser Arafat, and that Egyptian came from Egypt. They grabbed an Egyptian named Yasser Arafat, who claimed near the end of his life that he was born and raised in Gaza. It's not true. He was raised in Egypt. But anyway, they grabbed this guy. The Arab League grabbed this guy and created this organization called the Palestinian Liberation Organization, to usurp Israel from internally because they realized they couldn't kill them militarily from the outside, so they thought they could kill them through terrorism from the inside. It worked exactly the same way. It was the exact same concept as the divestment sanction and what do they call it? BDS, the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement. It's the exact same thing. It's an organization that was set up to kill Israel from the internally rather from externally, because externally they can't kill them militarily, so they might as well kill them internally, try to destroy their economy from the inside. So the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which in essence created the Palestinian people, because before they existed, the Palestinian people didn't. So the Palestinian Liberation Organization, they were the ones who started terrorism. They're the ones that are responsible for airport security. Before that, there was very little airport security. They started hijacking planes and blowing planes up, and suddenly airport security existed. They created a whole security industry that didn't exist through their terrorism. But they also created this idea that Jews are an easy target. They created this idea that Jews don't defend themselves. The Israeli army defends Jews, but Jews themselves don't defend themselves. So when they walked up to the street and they started beating up a Jew, or they walked into the street and started killing Jews, there were very few Jews that would defend anybody or even defend themselves. And they created this whole concept, this whole idea that Jews are an easy target. And that idea extends till today. But Jews are not an easy target. And we're starting to see that again today. I'm very happy that today's young people on campus are fighting back. I'm very happy to see that, because that hasn't been the case in a long, long time. Concordia University in Montreal is the apex of Arab activism. Anti-Israel activism. It is one of the only universities in North America that had a riot to try to stop a former Israeli prime minister from speaking on campus. It's one of the only universities in North America that funneled money student union of the university funneled money to Hamas and to Hezbollah and to the Palestinian Liberation Organization to fund terrorism. It's the only university in the world that Students' Handbook in 2001 listed September 11th, 2001, as Fire from the Sky Day. It's the only university in North America where on September 11th, 2001, the Arab Student Union threw a party to celebrate an attack, a terror attack, on the United States of America. So this university is not a very pleasant place to be for Jews. And that's the university I went to. I went to Concordia University in Montreal. And while I was there, there were so many incidents that happened that nothing that happens today really surprises me. I was Nazi saluted by a bunch of Arabs. I was attacked, physically attacked. I was attacked again as a full-grown adult just a few years ago, but 5-6 years ago, I was attacked again where at Concordia University, an Arab student came up to me and said to me, "Hey, take that off," referring to my yarmulke, my kippah, "take it off. This is an Arabic university. You can't wear that in an Arabic university." I was harassed by security and the student union because I dared attend a Palestinian Apartheid Week event with my camera. So nothing has changed. The actors have changed, and some of them actually are the same. But at the end of the day, the tactics are the same. And what about the Canadian government? What about the Quebec government? François Legault, the premier of Quebec, got up the other day and said that the encampment at McGill is illegal and it should be removed. McGill University ignored him. The police ignored him. The mayor of Montreal said that we need to be diverse and we need to hear all the points of view, and we can't stop people from expressing their point of view. And I agree with her. All points of view should be able to be expressed. But this is a little more than that. Jewish students are being barred from campus. And once you start getting into a system where some people are allowed on campus and Jews are not allowed on campus, once you get into a segregation system, then it's a little more than just expressing your opinion. And there are limits to expressing your opinion. So if there is somebody out there yelling, "I am Hamas," and October 7th wasn't enough, and kill the Jews and throw the Jews into the ovens, that far surpasses the acceptable limits in Canada on freedom of speech. When Jews are being barred from entering a university campus, when checkpoints are being set up and Jews can't go onto campus, that far exceeds the acceptable limitations of free speech. And that's where we are today. Jewish students are being sent home to attend classes by Zoom. Thugs are running the university and are dictating to the university who and who cannot be on campus. And the governments and the local governments are sitting around and doing nothing. When Yeshiva Gedola was shot twice, two bullet holes in high school and an elementary school. Two bullet holes. Shot twice. In Montreal, in a Jewish neighborhood in Montreal. The mayor of Montreal got up in front of the school. And she gave a speech. And she started the speech off with, "We condemn all acts of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia in Montreal. Montreal has no place for this." Now, why she had to link anti-Semitism and Islamophobia when a Jewish school was shot is beyond me. Why there always has to be a caveat when they say we condemn anti-Semitism, I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't know why a politician, any politician, can't get up and say we condemn anti-Semitism. Hatred against Jews is wrong. I don't know why they can't do that, but they don't. They always incorporate Islamophobia in there too, and I have no idea why. The causes for anti-Jewish, anti-Judaism, and anti-Muslims are totally different. The reasons behind them are completely different. So I have no idea why they're always linked. But they are. And her statement was, "We condemn anti-Semitism and we condemn Islamophobia." Well, thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. What are you going to do about it? So in that case, she posted police cars in front of Jewish schools. And they sat there playing on their phones for months, spending millions of dollars, but not really providing any kind of real, concrete solution to the problem. And then when this crops up, where Jewish students are banned from campus, where Jewish students are being excluded, intimidated, beaten up, and the mayor holds the police back, doesn't allow the police to rid the university of hostile people who are taking over the campus, it's condemnable. It's completely and utterly and absolutely condemnable. Unbelievably condemnable. And for the Prime Minister of Canada to remain silent. Oh, I'm sorry. He wasn't silent. He made a couple of statements. It's also condemnable. So what is the solution to all this? Where do we go from here? It's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. It's such a great question. Where do we go from here? How do we solve this problem? Well, if it were up to me, I would tell you I would have not reacted the way the Jewish community reacted, and I'm just a humble talk show host, so take my word for what it's worth. I would not have reacted at all to these pro-Hamas agitators. They're looking for attention. If you don't give them the attention, they don't get it. I would not have reacted at all. And if the media would have come to me and said to me, Howie, what do you think of this pro-Hamas demonstration at McGill University? I would have looked at them and said, what a bunch of fools. What a bunch of fools. Are these the people who stand for gay rights? Are these the people who stand for transgenderism? Are these the people who give you a hard time if you use the wrong pronoun? Are these those people? Because if these are those people and they are standing for Hamas, well, then they should go to Gaza and stand for Hamas in Gaza. Form a line and try to stop the Israeli army from going into Gaza. That's what they should be doing. Volunteer for a Gazan charity and go there and see the fine reception that they will receive using their pronouns, their chosen pronouns. And that's how I would have reacted. I would have ridiculed them. I would have said, there is no way that I will start a conversation with anybody. And this is what, by the way, what every Jewish activist should say. There is no way that I should start a conversation with anybody who tells me that Israel has no right to exist. If that's the basis of the conversation, if that's the beginning of the conversation, that's the starting point, there's nothing to talk about. So if we want to start and talk about reality, we could talk about reality. But if you think about it, if somebody tells you Israel has no right to exist and then wants to go on and tell you that Israel broke international law and is committing a genocide, the argument is laughable. Because the same international law that they're quoting, wrongly by the way, but quoting, and the same accusation that they're making that Israel committed a genocide, and according to international law, Israel is committing a genocide, the same international law they're talking about is the international law that created Israel. Don't forget, Israel was created by the United Nations. Don't forget, Israel was created by a resolution which became international law. There's just so much more we could talk about. And I'll be back again tomorrow to talk a little more about this. I'm Howie Silberger. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again tomorrow right here on the True Talk Radio Network. Have a great night.